our resources. Chair and honourable members, we are very much delighted and pleased with the opportunity you've given us to come and present the Exxaro story and what we have been doing and attempting to do and are planning to do in the next few years. In the interest of time, Chairperson and honourable members, I will just go through the team members that we have here who will be giving presentations at various intervals. I have Mr. Ramesh Chakan, who is Group Manager Sustainable Development at Exxaro. And on my left, I have Rieta Pieter, who is Human Resources Executive General Manager. And then on the extreme left, I have Mr. Mongezi Veti, who is General Manager of Safety and Sustainable within Exxaro. And this is the team that we have that we'll be presenting. Might I just say up front and just apologize to you, Honorable Chair, and members of the House, in that we have made some slight changes in the paperwork. And reason being that, I mean, it helps to listen when you have an opportunity and you pick up certain things. And I must thank those that have gone before us, because and the honourable members, because they've asked questions. And every time you sit there, you start jotting some questions. So if you could just bear with us as we try and add a few of those. And of course, as the Chairperson pointed out, we need to move with lightning speed, and we will attempt to do that. Really, the purpose of today's presentation is just to provide feedback to the Portfolio Committee on minerals and resources with reference to progress that we've made on the Mining Charter, and also look at what we are doing and are planning to do with regards to youth development. The agenda for the day is as stated over there, and I'm not going to go through that because everything that we've got is there. Probably may I just jump onto the executive summary that we have, which has quite a lot of dots. Where you see on the legend, on the right-hand side, where it is green, it shows that we are on track, really, to meet the 2014 target. Where it is orange or yellow, I don't know, depending on the color that you've got, it just says that it is in progress. In other words, we haven't attained the targets that we set ourselves, or the department would have set ourselves. And where it is red, it says that, geez, this is a risky area, and I'm pleased to say that we don't see risky areas there. But let me highlight a few areas where there are changes. If you could go back to that slide. Where we've made changes, under three, you will see that under housing, we've changed the green dot to a yellow-orange dot. The reason for that is that there's a mine in the northern province called Chikondeni, and we have about 24 employers still in the process of moving out of the hostel. So because they are not out, we just thought that it would be honest enough to say that no, it's not achieved. It's still work in progress. And also looking at employment equity, if you look on the yellow-orange dot there, it says that insofar as people with disabilities, we haven't attained the number that we are looking at. So those are the two issues that I think I wanted to highlight. The rest, I think, are self-explanatory. And if we could just move probably to the slide, which the next slide, sir, if we probably could look at that. This is the ownership structure of Exxaro. As members would recall, Exxaro is today probably four and a half years old, and not four, probably, and a bit, because this month we'll be celebrating our fifth year anniversary. So the company, it comes a long way, and all the work that we're reporting on is the work that has happened in the last 4.5 years since the formation of the Zara. If I could just have a quick stab at where Zara comes from. Zara, the block at the top indicates, comes from Eastcore. Eastcore was split up into two, was unbundled into two, that is Eastcore, which is now ArcelorMittal, and Kumba, which was further split into two to form Kumba Iron Ore as well as Exaro. And of course, there's Exaro and there's Kumba Iron Ore. And of course, also in 2001, there was a company formed, which was called ASB's, which was formed by two companies, and that is BHP Billiton and Anglo American. They formed ASB's. And in 2006, what remained of Kumba when the split happened was merged with Exaro. With ASB to form Exaro. And in 2008, Exaro itself acquired a port from Namaco Sands, Namaco Sands from Anglo American, because we have the mineral sands business. So we wanted to beef that one up and create a very big business in that instance. So this is a little history or short history of Exaro. And now, Exaro was formed and we created a board, and I'm sure on the website this is what you will see as the directors of the organization. Now, I must indicate that in as much as we are proud of the of the HTSA representativity or representation in the on the board, we still have one slot that is still available where we are looking for another director. And the focus is on finding another woman director so that we increase women representation on the board. But generally, this is the board. And now, on the ownership side, if I may just spend a few minutes on that one. Exaro is currently 52.1% held by empowerment shareholders, which is, and they are all grouped under one roof, and that is called BE Holdco. Now, BE Holdco comes, and it's got quite a number of representatives, and they range from the IDC, AFISWE, AABAN to TISO, and Masari Bakopan. I can, if members would indulge me, just probably give you a taste of who is sitting in each and every one. Maybe if I'm not going to talk about the IDC, but I'm going to talk about ASC's. ASC's is a very broad-based consortium which has got B Holdings, that is the promoters of the deal. We have Nehao Investments. We have Youth Clubs of South Africa. We have Youth Investments and quite a number of, and National Rural Women's Movement are in that one. If you look at the Abantu, they've got organizations like Mutuoli, Women in Mining, and very many others. TISO has just merged with Kagiso Trust to form the Kagiso TISO company that we've got, and they have that percentage. Masari Bakopana, you have Women in Mining, National Rural Women's Movement, we have Nozala, and we have Malibongwe as part of that one. So all those would form what you have there as BEHOLDCO. And these are the Exaro is. These are the companies that all the businesses were involved in. Exaro owns 100% of its coal business. It currently owns 100% of its mineral sands business, 100% of the base metals business. And I'm going to talk about this because it's been in the news, particularly the Zinco business and what is going on there. And we have a 20% interest in Sishen Iron Ore, which is part of Kumba Resources. If you could close it. Now, as this is the company has been operating for the last 5 years, four and a half years, we took a decision within Exaro that, oh sorry, this is one of the missing slides, if you don't mind, the one that was just added on this. Thanks for that. So what we're saying is that since the company was formed, the benefits that accrue to shareholders and employees probably had to flow in the following manner. Every year, twice a year since Exxaro was formed, we have been declaring dividends. And it is quite pleasing that, and the way we structured it is that we pay 50% of the dividend to the financial institutions in order to repay the debt. The other 50% goes straight into the empowerment organizations, because it is critical that they sustain themselves and keep themselves alive and pursue the projects that they have. So when you look at BEHOLCO in total, for the last 4.5 years, that is June of this year, we have paid in total about 2.86 billion to the empowerment organization. And that is the 50%. The other 50% went towards repayment of the debt. But we're not only focusing on shareholders, the employees, particularly the ones that do not belong to the management structures, every employee. And if you look at we've got an ESOP scheme, and we call it the Exxaro Empowerment Scheme. And today it's got about 9,200 beneficiaries. And they also benefit through dividends. And throughout that period, each participant has been getting has gotten in total something like 9,210 over that 4.5 year period. And of course, if you put all that together, we've distributed about 81.5 million to all employees. Now, that structure, that ESOP has a 5 year life, and that one comes to an end this year. And as a result of that, we will be making a full payment to all participants, and we are pleased to say that, I mean, if you look at the share price of 179, and today the share price is just over 180, 179 rand, each employee will walk away with 114,000 rand and for this particular period. So quite a number of people will be empowered around this time, and they'll walk away with this number. And that, I think, is part of what we've been encouraged to do, and I think it's working well. We are in the process of relooking and putting together a new scheme, because I think it is important that employees continue participating. That is going through the approval processes currently. And maybe if I could just finish on the ownership side by saying that probably if you look, this is just the history of Exxaro as was formed 4.5 years. If you're looking at probably a market cap of 64, and we are probably close to 70 billion rand in terms of market cap today, the HDSA ownership, or what is in the hands of HDSA, is in the region of about 35 billion rand, which is quite a significant number. That indicates that the targets that are there have been exceeded. Might I add that, for an empowered organization, it becomes a bit difficult for you to go through a meeting, whether it's 26% or whatever it is. But what's pleasing for us is that we are over 52% anyway, so the creation of the company was great. So this is a new generation company, which is HDSA-owned and HDSA-controlled. I shall now, with speed, Chair, with your indulgence, request my colleague, Rieta, just to take us through housing and what it is that we're doing there.
Chair, thank you for this opportunity. The primary focus of Exxaro's housing strategy is that one of home ownership. And to enable that, we're paying housing allowances or living out allowances to employees. And in 2010, we paid 137 million towards that. We also have a housing subsidy for first-time home owners, where we assist them with their repayments of their bonds in the first 5 years of ownership. I think the last couple of blocks, the first one indicates the 0.25%, the 24 employees at Chikundeni, that's still not in single accommodation. At the next slide, we can see just on the right bottom, there is a picture of the first one of the first hostels that we converted into flats for families and couples. And then there's also some of the first houses that we built at our Arnold mine. Since then, we progressed in terms of housing, and the Medupi project in Lepalali gave us the opportunity, and we built around 797 additional houses in that environment. And I think what is something that we're very proud of is that they were all eco or green type of housing. We also received the Nedbank Green Mining Award in 2010, and it is the intention of the organization to continue and roll out this model to also to some of our other businesses. The next slide just indicates to you actually pictures of those houses. These are the houses that we finished since the beginning of this year, end of last year, the beginning of this year. It's houses as well as living units, your duplex type of housing. If we can move to preferential procurement, I think what is important that 3% of our procurement is actually we procure from women enterprises. We are above the target in terms of the procurement of consumables, above the target in terms of procurement of capital goods, and I think that big overperformance there is mainly due to the Medupi project. And then in terms of procurement services, we're having specific alternatives in place, and as part of our enterprise development, we will specifically look at increasing that and ensuring that we comply with that target. If we look at employment equity, the mining charter overall target was that of 40% in management category, and that we achieved. If you break it down in different categories and you look at the new revised charter targets for 2010, we overachieved the 2010 revised mining charter targets, except for the senior management. And in terms of that, we have specific plans. That's where we have our fast-tracking programs and retention strategies for our equity candidates, as well as skills transfers from our more senior employees. The next slide is one that we added. Somewhere we missed it in the printing of the book, and that specifically focused on women and HDSA. On women, we achieved the target set by the DMR. However, on the disability, we're still not on the 2% as it is required. If you look at human resource development, I think over the last 5 years, since the beginning of Exxaro as a company, 2007 onwards, we never spent less than 5% of our payroll on HRD, human resource development of our employees. If we look at the next slide, just to give you an idea in terms of where we spend this money, on artisan and learnership, we have on average 430 learners, engineering learners, that's for artisans, in the pipeline. And this makes up of 5.4% of all the learnerships in the mining sector based on the information from the MQA. And as Exxaro employees, it's only 2.5% of the employees. I think what is important that we exceed the target 3%. Industry is currently 4.6%, and Exxaro spent last year 6.2% of its salary bill on HRD development. 76% of our learner intake is black, and I think this is also one of the successes in terms of achieving our equity targets. We have a philosophy where we say staffing philosophy where we say 75% of promotions and appointments must come from internal of the company and only 25% of external, and therefore the HDSA representation in our pipeline, in our talent pipeline, is extremely important. I think Exaro trained or 500 artisans qualified over the last 5 years through the Exaro training centres and initiatives, and 108 engineers. If you look at ABIC, we have ABIC training in all our business units. 83% of all employees are functionally literate. We currently have 156 employees in ABIC training as it is. We constantly provide all employees with the opportunity to participate in ABIC training. If you look at bursaries and our bridging school, we currently have 103 bursars on university at the cost of 11 million rand. 88 professionals in training, that is postgraduate on the in-the-job training and development for engineers and technicians, where we spend 40 million per annum on average. 66% of our bursars are HDSA, of which 20% women. We also have a bridging school. We are on an annual basis take in 30 students at a cost of 2.2 million. Up until now, 210 students went through the bridging school. Other training initiatives, we spent 85 million on functional training, compliance training, and also individual development plans that we have for each and every individual employee in the organization. In terms of community development, I think, Chair, I just want to hand over to Mungesi Besi. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Rachel, and thank you, Honorable Chair. In the interest of time, I would as well spend not much time on the presentation. What we intend to demonstrate on the slide is a breakdown of where we spend the money with respect to community. Up to now, from 2007, the company has spent 222 million rand, and that has been split as it is indicated. In terms of the infrastructure, we spent 17.5 million rand, which goes to things like road construction, building roads, and then one of the biggest is on sustainable development, and that goes with the collaborations that we have with the universities in the country. Just to mention three of them is West University, University of Pretoria, and University of South Africa. We support them in terms of climate change and global warming issues, because in terms of our principle, we one of the companies in South Africa that believe that something needs to be done in climate change and global warming, given the issues that we affect us in the world, and with respect to COP 17 that is here in South Africa as we speak. And then on the enterprise side, we extending our wings even to the provinces where we don't operate. Having had an opportunity of sitting here and listening to the questions, for instance, in the Eastern Cape, we do not have any operation. But on that side, we, because of the fact that we believe that we draw a significant component of our labor in that region, and we had a project in the Tsalo region, which is around poultry, and it is next to the old College of Agriculture called Jongisizwe in that area. So we've aligned it with that College of Agriculture, just to say some of the things. All right, Ramesh, you can move. With respect to health and safety, we are 70% in terms of the tripartite actions that have been agreed between us and the Chamber of Commerce, which is just an industry initiative. And also we have invested 14.9 million rand on HIV/AIDS in terms of ensuring that our people do keep healthy, and also make sure that we prolong the lives of those that have been impacted by the epidemic. On the far right, we've got a slide on lost time injury frequency rate. As you can see, that from 2008, we have been improving in terms of our performance from 0.46 and to 0.15 as we speak today, which we believe is a significant improvement given the fact that we are a mining company. With respect to fatalities, we still having some challenges. We accept that our performance is a bit erratic, in the sense that in 2008 we had unfortunately lost five colleagues, and we saw a declining trend up to three in last year, but unfortunately we have seen a loss of three colleagues in the year under review. But the company is investing a significant amount of money in ensuring that we cap the escalation of fatalities in our operations. With respect to environmental issues, we believe that we're fully compliant in terms of environmental management plans, and that is in line with our policies as one of the companies that are prescribing to good environmental practices. And all our closure plans have been submitted in terms of the requirements. With respect to water use licenses, in the last 18 months, and we want to congratulate the Department of Water Affairs for working with us and granting us about 16 permits across our operations, and with four remaining, and we're working together with the officials in that regard. And there's a process called LITSIMA that is working very hard to assist us, and hopefully in the first quarter of next year, those four will have been approved. The slides seeks to inform the committee of the performances that have been rewarded by the independent companies that work with us. As you can see that on the left, we have been awarded by the Association of Certified Chartered Accountants, and we came out as second place. This is in essence to recognize the practices and the efforts by the companies in South Africa, and we came number two there. And then the other one, we the SAPI Award, which happened literally a week ago, and we came number two, and we received the merit of award there. We came first, on that one, and the Ernst & Young, that we came sixth place in that one. In terms of the chairs as well, this is just the spread of the money that we spend together with the universities. In fact, the money is 100% subsidy by Exaro, UNISA is 7.5 million rand over 3 years. Vets University is 12.6, and University of Pretoria 3.5, and we believe that we're putting money where our mouths are, in the sense that we are ensuring that we're sensitive to environmental issues. There's still just a few slides to complete this one. In terms of the research and development, Exaro is one of the few companies that are having in-house their own research and development, which is the work that we do to scientifically assess the needs of beneficiation. And we also do have the other companies within the country, and also working in collaboration with CSIR, MinTech, etc. And that work is developing quite well.
Next Chair, I know that probably the targets insofar as beneficiation are there, and it's an area that has just been defined for us, and in some instances it's still not very clear. But we took an initiative just to see how a product like coal that we're producing and ilmenite that we produce could beneficiate it. And these are things that probably we managed at Khurkhalak to produce what we call char, where you take the coal and probably process it and take the volatiles out and produce another product that would go to the ferrochrome industry. And in the same way, if you go through and look at your mineral sands business, where we mine ilmenite and then process it to produce your slag and zircon. And if you could turn the page to the following slide, maybe you could see the results of probably the benefits of beneficiation. If you look at the existing projects that we've got, for instance, if we were to take coal, a particular coal called small nut, and that would probably fetch something like 500 rands a ton. And but if you take that very volume, that like 205 tons, and you beneficiate it and produce char, the volume comes down, but the price that you fetch is slightly better, is about 2,347, which shows that beneficiation has some benefits in terms of creating more value. So you add more value through that. But not all the coals would lend themselves into that. So it's something that, you know, we should not just generalize and say, well, if you took ilmenite that you mine probably around the coast that we've got at Namakwa as well as KZN10, and you produce slag, you could see the benefits out of that, where the price, for instance, of pure ilmenite will be about 1,100. And once you do slag and low manganese pig iron, you probably get prices of over 3,000 that we've got rand a ton, and that's really great. And that has encouraged us to take this step a little bit further, and we're busy looking at creating market coke out of that, and that's a project that we think will work very well. And future projects, and that's why we've just announced a deal that we're doing with Tronox, a US-based company, because there are very few companies in the world that have that pigment technology, and if we could lay our hands on that, we're able to create an industry in South Africa. I mean, if you look at, you take the very processed product, which you call slag, and you take it further to producing pigment, you see the value has changed dramatically from 3,000 rand a ton to probably 21,000 rand a ton. And that is massive. And if that would continue, we're doing quite a lot of research on this one, and we think that would be very, very useful going forward. And may I just get my colleague Ramesh to probably do the last but one bit before we, so that the time, Chairperson, you don't say stop.
Thank you, Honorable Chair and members. This is a proposed strategy on job creation and youth development. As Exaro, we've been grappling with this national imperative that we all have over the last year or so, and this is the ideas that many ideas have been thrown on the table, but this is the one that we're hoping the board will adopt and accept. Essentially, we believe that job creation for youth actually needs to start at education. So we're looking at education and say we need to ensure that we have well-functioning schools. So instead of the ad hoc donations and contributions to school, we're now looking at a whole school development program, which wherein the district officials, together with the principals, would all work together to ensure that we look at schooling as a systemic unit, so that from the pre-primary to primary to high school, we must ensure that the entire value chain is focused on, so that because the tendency for schools is to blame the matric teachers, blame the grade 11, the grade 11 blame the grade 10, and everyone points fingers in all directions, but there's this whole range of problems that go through the education system. So that's the one area that we now are focusing on, and the other one is on professional career guidance, because we believe that if you do not include that, because that's sorely lacking in our education system, children do not know in which direction they should go, and they often fail because of poor choices they've made. The next phase after education, of course, is the skills development side, and we do have our own skills development centers. We now want to widen their scope so that huge numbers of community members could also benefit from those skills training centers. So, for example, if I could just use an analogy, if a child comes out of a well-functioning school, is now passed school, wants to become a plumber, for argument's sake, then the technical skill centers must be able to cater for the child to be able to acquire their skills. Of course, we also have tertiary education, and we are already playing a large role there, which we'll continue to do and expand, which is in terms of the bridging programs and the bursaries that we give to students who wish to go into the academic field, either technicon or universities. But the skills development, while we have it for our employees, we haven't expanded it wide enough for communities, and that's the next phase that we'll be looking at. Then we are currently looking at a business of installing business incubators, because that child or person who became a plumber now needs to understand how to run a business, because business skills is very important. Knowing the technical skills of being a plumber is not going to be good enough unless you have the business skills of starting your own business. And so we'll be looking at installing incubators, business incubators, where mentorship and coaching will be received, and that's going to be aligned with our procurement processes at our mines. And then the last step is to establish business hubs, which is essentially a process of offering soft loans. Because what you now need to do is, once you've given technical skills or tertiary skills, you've given business skills, you also now need to capacitate the person to be able to actually open that business, because finance is often a stumbling block. So soft loans would then be there. We believe that if we follow this approach, because each business hub we know on average creates about 20 new enterprises per annum, and if you take a ratio of each enterprise giving you 5 jobs, then we are saying that 100 new jobs can be realized by a business hub. And if we take that logic further, we are saying that if we establish 5 hubs in 2012, that will be 500 jobs, eventually 100 enterprises, and 500 jobs will be created, and that goes, and if you can see from the table there that we're talking about eventually creating about 38 business hubs, which will lead to 3,800 jobs. I think the important thing here is that what we are saying is that we're not looking at our needs. So these are skills that allows people to start their own businesses, because at the end of the day, we have to stimulate the economy, grow the economy. It's a small sector that is going to create the real jobs. So we want to play a role in terms of stimulating the small business sector so that they can in turn create the kind of jobs that the country sorely needs.
I think Mr. Nkosi can take over here.
Thanks, Chair. I've got 3 more slides to completion. The first one, just to digress, is that we're running a very huge project in Port Khalak, which is in Halale, where we are expanding a mine to supply Maiduguri Power Station. It's one of these ones that we added as we were going along. Now, this project is about 9.5 billion rands, and we are almost there in terms of being ready to supply coal to Maiduguri Power Station. I mean, that project, through that project, Exxaro has contributed more than 190 million to infrastructure development, that is roads, water capacity building, and through the Lephalale Lephal Development Forum. Through that project, we've had to skill people, and we've had about 4,200 people that had to be skilled, and we managed to create about 11,470 jobs. And these are not sustainable jobs, but jobs in construction. But if you're looking at permanent jobs, the number below, which is 490, is the number that we have managed to create as a result of that. So 42% of the total spend has been local businesses there. And it's quite exciting what new enterprises are doing in terms of that. Might I also add that project, what is quite interesting, out of the if you take out of the 9.5 billion, nine billion really, let me put it this way, 91% or 93% of the 9 billion, we procured everything from South Africa. So quite a lot of it was not just imported. 7% was only imported. The majority of the equipment, capital goods, were done in South Africa, and we think that that was very good for this economy. If I may move, Chair, to probably, before I conclude, the Chair said to me as he was walking around, he said, yeah, you are retrenching people. And maybe I just thought that I would deal with that before the Chair asked the question. And that happened in our base metals business. I don't know whether you want to go back to slide number 2. If it's possible. But as I said, we've got quite a number of businesses that we are running. But if you go back to, and one of the businesses that we've got has been the zinc business. And I must say that this business that we've had for since 2008 up until now, it makes losses. It's not making money. And therefore it's burning cash out of all the other businesses. But this business, what is interesting is that what we're focusing on and what the chairperson was asking me about was what happened at Zinco Wishes and Springs. That's a zinc processing plant that we have there. Now, that plant was never designed to be a zinc processing plant. It was a uranium plant in the first place. And therefore, when Goldfields and the others got involved in it, we just continued with that. And as a result, if you look at that plant, it's not efficient at all. I mean, to give you an example, the world standard of a plant like that, that produces about 100,000 tons of zinc, would probably have about 200 to 250 individuals running that business as employees. But because this one was not designed for that, it had to be labor intensive. And therefore, we had to employ just over 700 people just to run with that. Now, with cost escalation over a period of time, it becomes very impossible to deal with that one. If you give an example, electricity has been going up for the last 25%. Now, if you take electricity and labor costs, the two of them give you 50% of the total input cost, and the other cost is your transportation cost, because we have to source feedstock from three sources, one from Black Mountain, which is in the Northern Cape, the other one is in Namibia, and the other one is around the world. And the cost of transporting this one to Zinco is really a problem, because it's inland. We have experts, say, from Korea looking at this business and said the only salvation that you could have in this business is that if it was located along the coast, maybe you would reduce your labor costs. But that would not help with the electricity, so you would reduce your transportation costs. But that would not have helped with electricity going up, and it would be going up again. So because it's burning cash, it's got no potential of being turned around, because we brought in quite a lot of people, took a decision that maybe we should close this business down. And probably the affected individuals here, you're looking close to 700, as I said. What we have tried to do is to absorb all these individuals into our organization. Unfortunately, 180 indicated that they will be prepared to move from Springs to other bases that we have, and we do understand that. And all members then will get full benefit out of that. The big question is then, what do you do with the plant? I think there's quite a lot of dumps that are sitting there, and we're looking at ways of processing those dumps and running the rehabilitation and dealing with all environmental issues around that. That project, we think, will run for another 20 years. So it's not, we're not going to close it down on day one, but what's going to happen is going to scale down gradually. And we could employ probably another 100, 220 people amongst those that we have here. But apart from that, what Ramesh was talking about of new enterprises that we're talking about, we are going to be focusing those in that particular region, because I think it is important to ensure that people in that region continue to have some sustenance and work. So in conclusion, Chair, Exxaro is committed to transformation objectives of government. Whilst progress has been made, we are aware of the challenges we face and look forward to focusing on them in the short term, medium term, and in the long term. Thank you, Chair, and members of the honourable members of the committee.
Thank you very much from the team of Exxaro. Honourable members, there you have a rather straightforward and clear presentation. Can we engage? Can I see some hands?
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. Mine is on with page 25. We health and the and health and safety. I want more clarity with the number of fatalities, especially in 2010 and 2011. Thank you.
You get the question?
Yes. Yes, we got it. Thank you.
Thank you. Honorable Hololu.
Thank you very much, Jefferson, for the presentation. Thank you very much. I want to start on the board of directors, in that I think you need to do more, because I see a boys choir on that one. Yeah, and then I wanted to check their net asset value of the company, and then on the ownership, I wanted to check on the shares. Are they open to the general public? And then on fronting, I just wanted to check also on the question of fronting. How prevalent is fronting in the company? And then on your R&D, I see that you've got a division on R&D. How much do you spend on R&D annually? I want to commend the Exxaro on the idea of focusing more on education. In that, you see, with the job creation, I think you are spot on. Where to start from education. I wanted to commend you for that, and you must do more on the question of education, starting from preschool up to high school. At least that one is going to try and address the question of job creation. I wanted to encourage you to do more on that one. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Bigani.
Chairperson, my question is in relation to, well, the old boys choir has already been mentioned. Let me skip that, but it's shocking. I hope something has been done about it. And considering how the others have at least made an effort to improve the number of women in the country, it should most probably be much worse for you in community development projects where you're trying to empower women. I'm sure you even forget about them. But let's give you the benefit of the doubt. Then, on the issue of housing and living conditions, how do you determine who benefits in the housing projects? I'm mainly going to the issue of, if you look at on slide 13, where you have a situation of, 232 employees who benefit, but on the other slide there, you can go up to 9,750. Do you cater for them at all levels of employment, or are you looking at it differently? Because my worry is you might find that those who are at a particular level or a particular salary scale up to a certain point are the ones who might benefit from these houses, and the actual gist of the laborers are not included in this. So how do you determine that to ensure that at least there's some form of balance in terms of your housing scheme? Your targets there, your employment equity targets, I wish more could have been said, obviously, again, in relation to the women, in particular black women. Now, when you paint a picture like this, the way you've painted it, it's a clear presentation, it's understood, but it doesn't give you the true picture of exactly what is going on in terms of employment equity there, if it's being generalized in terms of your top management going down your core and critical skills as to what is your balance. I'm more interested in knowing what is Exxaro doing in terms of empowering more women to ensure that there's a gradual balance in the industry or in your company. Then the issue of training, human resource development, I'm looking at slide 21. You know, we repeatedly have this thing of there's added training, but how relevant is it to your industry? Or do you just give the needs in terms of arbit as far as you can go, and then do you then make sure that these employees are channeled correctly to be sustainable within the company, but also to see that there's growth and development or even progression in terms of positions? Because if you look at that, if you look at the ABET issue these days, it doesn't seem relevant anymore in most industries or companies anywhere else to just say you're going to have straight ABET training. But if that ABET training is not aligned to the core functions of the company, then those people are of little value actually in the end of the day. So how do you ensure that the very training is channeled such that those people do progress eventually where relevant? We understand that some might not be trainable past a particular level, but surely to be able to keep your employees and even improve their status or functionality, you know, that you'll need to elaborate on that for us, please. And coming to the conclusive slide 35, I hear you're saying you're committed to transformation and your objectives and so on. But how do you necessarily handle your community, your relationship with the community? Yeah, I'm referring because of your relationship with Call of Africa in Limpopo. What is going on there with the Makado issue in terms of resolving community challenges that are faced there? Because there is an indication that all is not well in the way you approach your resolutions that are favorable to the community. Thank you, Chair.
Yeah, those would be the questions. Oh, Honorable Sonder. I just wanted to check what percentages are we talking about
in the company when we talk about employees and contractors, what percentage make employees and what percentage makes contractors, and how do you treat the two? The other one, I don't know whether it has been spoken to or not. I might have been absent by then. Your noise-induced hearing loss, how prevalent is that, and where are you in terms of decibels in that one? Let me ask those two questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. The matter of concern on your ownership structure, page, I think slide 11. Indeed, your record is impressive. You are broad-based. And indeed, you have exceeded the set targets in the mining channel. But the very worrisome question is, how sustainable is this? Are there any possibilities of takeover by other players, either hostile takeover or a friendly takeover? Because when one looks at this, other players in the industry would be attracted to you, and as a result, make some offers. So we would want to get your feel in terms of the sustainability of the structure as it stands. It is easy for an established player out there to simply make an offer and then make itself to be compliant, even over compliant for that matter. Then, Madame, your in page 17, your graphs on procurement are a bit confusing. Procurement of consumables, you're saying you are exceeding the target by 25%, but then you have a 50%, and I don't know what does it mean, the half mark that you have indicated there. And then there is this procurement of services that you have encycled with RAD, and where you have not met the target. I don't know whether it's an indication of you not having met the target. And then on capital goods, you unbelievably surpassed, way above the target. And how did you make it? How did you get it right? A number of companies are found wanting in this area of procurement on capital goods. But maybe you can share with us the formula that you have used or you are using. And indeed, the last question would be on page 20, where you have developed over the period of 5 years, 500 artisans, 108 engineers. Where are they? Are they within your employment, or have you developed them and therefore allowed them to be poached by other people out there? Please, could you care to respond to those?
I think it's a challenge that every organization would face, particularly as an empowerment organization. You have shareholders. I mean, if you look at the Exaro structure, all of the shareholders that you sitting at the top have committed to being with the company for 10 years. So the 10-year slot comes to an end in 2016. Now, during that time, they are not allowed. The first 5 years, they're not allowed to do anything to sell because they're getting dividends, but they're not allowed to sell to another person. But from December this year, they will start selling, but they can only sell to HDSAs or to other PE companies. Now, the danger with that is as follows, Chair, that the numbers we're talking about here are huge. I mean, if for instance, some members of Basadi Bakopan wants to sell, or half of it, that runs probably into 7 billion rand. And they want to sell that one, and they have to sell it to an HDSA. Chances are that they won't find an HDSA who's got that kind of money. But they will find a combination of an HDSA supported by a bank or a financial institution. Now, obviously, once you get into that frame area, that zone, chances are that there will be dilution in terms of ownership because it will move away from what is generally or today is currently black owned. So that is the danger there because it's structured like that. And it cuts across. So as the company XR, what we're looking at, we're saying, we think that that shareholding structure that we've got there, people, you know, some of them have been sitting there. If they sit for 10 years, some of them will be 62 years old. Some of them will be 75 years old. I can't force people to continue being there because I'm discriminating against them. If they want to realize cash, they must take cash. But the important thing is, Chair, you've remarked, what happens with that? That becomes a big problem. And that is a problem with all empowerment organizations, might I add. Because if you look across the board and you look at what is there and what's still sustainable, chances are that at some point, like all shareholders, they may wish to exit. Now, what are we thinking of doing now is that for all the new projects that we're embarking on, we've got a new mine that we're planning to construct in Nepal, just outside Nepal, called Tavamitsi. We are engaging communities because we think that working with communities could assist us in having a closer relationship with them, but getting them to own a portion of that organization. So whilst we're losing some over there at the top, probably through this mechanism that we're trying to implement, we may start throwing back and getting some of the shareholders so that it continues being an empowerment organization. Next week I'm going to KZN because we've got about 9 amakosi that one is dealing with, just to see whether all of them could have a stake in the mine that we want to construct, that which is called Fairbreeze. That's another project that we're developing. And through those measures, we're trying to address that one, Chair. And I hope it answers that one. Sustainability, it is sustainable, but there are quite a number of issues that we need to deal with going forward. And I'll just jump and I'll leave this to my colleagues to deal with. Community relations, particularly the Makhado one, at this time, Honorable Member, we're not shareholders of Coal of Africa. So they run their own organization as they run. So we have no association or relationship with them. What they are doing at Vele and at Makhado, really, we're not involved. However, let me put it this way. They are busy with the feasibility study at Makhado. And because we gave them information for free and all other things in terms of assistance, we have an option to buy a certain percentage over a period of time. And we will have to exercise the option sometime next year. So for now, really, we have got no association or relationship. But when we exercise that option, then we'll have a relationship with them. And just jumping again, looking at R&D spend, we're spending about 75 million rands on R&D as we're talking today. Prevalence of fronting, it's just prevalent. It's all over the show. You plug one hole and it's there. You plug one hole, it is there. I mean, it is there. But there are strict and stringent measures, and we learn as we go along as the company and as the country, that these are issues that we face. I mean, because the people that procure services from us, they come from the general population of South Africa. And so it mirrors the population. What happens in society happens in these kinds of institutions. And I think it is important for us to continue and being vigilant to deal with that. You know, we've disciplined quite a lot of organizations in the last 2 years. We have blacklisted quite a lot of organizations that we found to have problems, because we've had quite a number of audits done on them and going and people visiting them. But we learn, and people, as you find them today, as you nail them, they find another scheme and they try to circumvent the process. The other question? Sorry.
So if I may just add that we conduct audits on an annual basis to check the funding issue. So that's one way that we try to deal with that.
I think, Chair, there was a question on ownership, whether it's open to general public. As I said, these will be there until 2016. However, there's a 33%, which is 35%, which is free float, and every member of the public can participate in that. There's a 9.7% that belongs to Anglo-American. I don't know what their long-term objective or interest is. We're happy to have them there, because when they are there, they provide comfort to a lot of people that we deal with outside, who probably have no trust in us as a small and a growing organization. I think they are playing a key role. But I think the other thing that we must acknowledge, the importance of an Anglo-American being there, is that when we formed Exaro, they spent quite a bit of their own money in facilitating the deal and ensuring that this organization survives. You know, when I look at the repayment of debt, by 2013, the B ownership will have repaid the entire Anglo debt at that time. And what would be left until 2016 is what we call the mezzanine debt. And because they funded and supported that process, and I think it's working well. Chair and honourable members, I head of the Boys Choir, Square, and as I said, well, I was trying to preempt it. There are quite a number of initiatives that we've got. But you know, the Boys Choir issue is an interesting one, because it also comes from the shareholding that we've got. Because each and every member has to have a representative on the board. Now, as the board, when they say, I want Ramesh to be there, the rules are such that you can't say, no, go away. But I can negotiate with them, I must be honest with you. I can negotiate with them. And that is why I said we still have one slot that is missing. And we're negotiating with one of the shareholders to give us a lady director on that scope. So we are. I promise you we'll deal with that one, Chair. I don't know, could I just quickly talk about fatalities and probably give to Rieta.
Thank you, Chair. With respect to fatalities in 2011, we basically have an unfortunate incident in different mines, and these accidents, two of them took place underground, and one was in surface. Just to give a little bit about the clarity, the one took place at Matla, which is one of our biggest mines, in a longwall operation. And these accidents were classified as one of those that are real accidents, in the sense that they are rare. We, in that operation, we are doing what we call total extraction, meaning that we take every coal seam in that area. By so doing, then you cause the ground above you to go down. And in that process, these individuals were getting into the section, and at that point, the so-called gulf, that occurrence, we call it gulf, meaning that the whole overburden just goes down at a lightning speed and create a lot of air movement, and that air swung this individual against the equipment, and then we lost that person. So it's in the 8 years of Matla, that was the first incident to happen. And then the other one, we had it at New Kleinsteel. Very mysterious conditions for it to happen. And we have just received the final report from DMR, and their recommendations are that no further action in terms of investigation must be carried on this one, because they see it as the real accident. And then within the company, there is a view that because of the lack of evidence, that we may take that case to the police, because one of the key witnesses who happened to be a city national, when we started to talk to them about polygraph tests, he unfortunately disappeared. And obviously to us, that is a leading indicator. We are reviewing that possibility. And then the last one took place at Arnott. It was a tire incident just on the surface. The individual was standing next to the tire, and at that point, then the tire exploded. And unfortunately, as he jumped out at the point of the impact, then he landed on the ground, and he lost his life because he broke his neck as he was landing on the ground. And these accidents, we consider them as rare accidents that could happen, and no sense of negligence either from the employee and otherwise. Thank you. Okay, on the question of the of noise, we're working, this is one of the projects that is handled by Chamber of Mines, by the way, under the MOSH project that Chamber of Mines champions. We are using Australians as a benchmark. The levels of decibels are being managed closely in the sense that every equipment now is labeled as to what decibel this equipment emits, so that then the employees can put their PPE, appropriate PPE, so that then they can mitigate the risk around that. So that is the project, I mean, that is the project that we have at this point in time, and we're really ensuring that our employees are well equipped with all the necessary equipment, in the sense that they should not be impacted adversely due to our own operations.
I think the honourable member is looking for the target decibels that each mine would have, and see whether we're getting closer to that, or we're not, or we've managed to reduce it.
Yes, and you reduced it from a certain number to a certain number. Now I just want to know, to understand, where are you now?
Okay, I can answer that. On average, we have been above 114 decibels. That's now in the last 3 years, and we've dropped that to about an average of 93. To a compliance of 85. So in other words, we've got that difference now to work on in the next 3 years in terms of our operation. But however, if as I said, the equipment that emits decibels more than 85, which is a threshold limit, then there are tools that are provided to employees to mitigate the risks. And we're not hard rock mining. We don't have much of jackhammer drilling. We're using the cutting machines, which is far less, and the water sprays that are used for dust suppression.
Okay, I think just on the housing, who benefits from the money that we spend on housing? It goes, actually, the 137 million on allowances go to your categories B at the Patterson level, B and C employees, so that's from your supervisor down in your structure, as well as the housing subsidy is also going to employees on your D lower level and down. So I think most of the benefits, and in terms of rental housing, I think everybody can actually rent a house or we provide the house if the person doesn't want to buy and his own house. Okay, in terms of the e-target on the women, okay, we have a women in mining initiative that we run on our on all our where all our business units are participating, where we're actually using the women that we already have to be role models for our communities, where we do professional career counseling in schools. They go out to schools, do professional career counseling, because I think one of the challenges that we have is interest from women's side to work not at the mine, but in the mine. So we have initiatives specifically going to that. We also look at our talent pipeline to bring women in to advance it in that area. If we look at ABET, what happens with people after ABET, we have career paths. So we will, on an individual base, there will be discussions with the individual. You will explain the career path, and if there is any development initiatives that's required or that the person is interested, and we also support in terms of that. Yeah, that's your individual development plan. Sorry. Okay.
Teresa, if you don't mind, I can just add, in the case of Arnott, with respect to AVET, there are individuals, for instance, that we put into this program in the last 5 years with no formal schooling, and some of them have progressed into a miner's position today, in line with your question as to whether we really drive them to get to a point where they can have a meaningful role in the organization.
Okay, on the question with regards to the split between employees and contractors, currently it's 50% employees, 50% contractors. It's mainly due to the construction that's currently happening at the Medupi project. And in the normal circumstances, I will say it's approximately 80% employees, 20% contractors. And in terms of, if you ask the question, how do we treat them? They come with the same induction, the same medicals, they're part of our scheme. I think what's also important that we, in terms of the contract, the commercial contract that we have with the contractor, that we also stipulate compliance targets for the contractors in their contract, in the agreement. Okay, on page 17 on the procurement, get there. The 50% line, Chair, is actually the target for 2014. The 50% line. And then the red block is where we're not compliant with the target. And then the big green bar is actually due to the Medupi project, the cut capital spend. So it's specific project capital that we're expecting.
I mean, on that, it's quite encouraging that I think the empowerment program in South Africa has been working, because, I mean, if you look at for that procurement on capital goods, we bought quite a lot from quite a lot of tubular products that we had to buy from a company called Katenga Tubular Construction, and that is an empowerment organization, and others like EMPC Engineering Projects, Stefanuti Stocks, not the other one, but the empowerment arm of that entity, and then Consolidated Power Projects, Quanco Holdings, PTY, those are black-owned organizations that we're divided from. And for 2010, that resulted in that number. We were so fortunate that, you know, quite a lot, because our focus was buying from black enterprises. I think that sort of completes the question.
I think there was a question of about where is our artisans. Okay. All over the country, Jeff. Now, I think we have approximately, on average, over the last 5 years, we had a 10% turnover on our artisans. And we make provision for that in terms of our pipeline. So we are losing people artisans. We have a very limited pool in the country, so everybody is looking, and it is a challenge actually to keep them.
Thank you very much, Zaro. You can see that we've gone beyond the time that we had set for ourselves due to the fact that the engagement has been quite interesting and exciting. So we thank you very much for your presentation, and also thank you for the engagement in terms of the responses to questions that we have asked, and with the hope that areas where you need to improve on, you would be working on as you have given an undertaking. Thank you very much. Can we take on the last presenter's extractor? Can you set yourselves up here, please?